Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on today in the 1 o'clock hour, our guy Nate Taylor from ESPN will join us, I believe, in studio. Saw him Sunday night, obviously, after the Chiefs and Eagles game. I know he has plenty of thoughts. Also want to get his latest information on Xavier Worthy. What is he hearing as we head into a week where it seems like there's at least a decent possibility, I feel like, that Worthy could play on Sunday, but maybe there's some other news out there. So what we'll hear from Nate Taylor about that a little bit later on in the show. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream will be up and running as well. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss this show or any of the shows, of course, on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Did you stay up till like midnight or so?
Hell
we're gonna,
no.
We're going to talk Chargers, Raiders in a second, but you didn't stay up.
I watched part of it.
The first game was fun towards the end.
In
huh?
fact, yeah, the end of that game was very good. Obviously, leaving Baker Mayfield time in a game is typically kind of a bad decision historically because he's been very good in those spots, and I don't know. I just like Stroud is so comfortably, as I told you, the year three marker Gold, where I just decide, oh, you're in the wash. Stroud is barreling towards it. Congratulations on being one of the 12 to 16 best quarterbacks in the NFL. And for the most part, or, you know, 10 to 18, if you want to put it in a bigger wash. And for the most part, because the Chiefs are the Chiefs, I don't take that all that serious on this end. So it feels like he's in there. But yeah, the first game was interesting. Second game, you could just tell very early on. One of those two teams was better, and that team was the Chargers. And because Geno looked bad and they were making mistakes, I didn't feel like I needed to see the end of that game to know how the end of that game was going to finish.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Chargers and Raiders here in about 8 minutes or so. I'm sure a lot of you were keeping an eye on that game. We know the Chargers are 2-0, two division wins. They got a third divisional opponent coming up on Sunday, as a matter of fact. So that's coming up. In a little while, also later on this hour, Drew will get us the latest on college football, on a national scale, some of the big headlines and what we should be looking for later on this weekend as well. But let's start with the Chiefs and their aggressiveness, because yesterday you guys heard Andy Reid live during this show around noon, and he was asked a question about, hey, you guys are going for it on fourth down a little bit more. Is that intentional? Is that something that you guys have made a concerted effort to go out there and try to be a little more aggressive on fourth downs? Now, he said, no, we're not really doing anything any different. I think he was talking about the conversion percentage. They've had a good conversion percentage for years. But right now, 2 weeks in, it's early, they are going for fourth down more often.
Yes, way more often. And that's the part where I don't understand. Like Andy yesterday, I feel like he intentionally misinterpreted the question because he's always trying to like play a game a little bit where he doesn't want teams thinking about the thing that he knows to be true or whatever it is. But right now, as it sits with the Chiefs, over the last 3 years, they go for it. I'll just give you an average over the last rather than list it off by year. Over the last 4 years, the Chiefs are in the 20s. They're like the 22nd, 23rd, roughly team in amount of times they go for fourth down. They have 1 year where they were not particularly good at going for it on fourth down, and they were in the 20s in percentage. And the other 3 years, they were in the top 10 of conversion rate. But they do not, decidedly, do not go for it more than two-thirds of the NFL. Sometimes even lower than that. Sometimes they're bottom five in the NFL. Two-thirds of the NFL, bare minimum, sometimes three-quarters of the NFL, goes for fourth downs more than the Chiefs do in any given season. And yet this year, in two games, they have gone for fourth down six times and accomplished at 5. So they're very successful so far in their attempts. The one, obviously, that people know from the game on Sunday that eventually led to the Eagles' field goal. I think they are going to go for it more. And it's a bit concerning because I think it's pretty clearly gold, a sign that they know they need it. Like, they know they need the points. And maybe it's just because Worthy and Rice aren't back yet. But I think it's based in the idea, not that what he said, which is like, well, the Eagles are aggressive, so we have to be aggressive. But instead, we have to go for it because these points aren't easy to come by right now.
Yeah, I think it's that. I also think, you know, when your offense is sluggish and struggling, you're trying to find a way to jumpstart it and hope maybe that's what gets the offense going and gets them in rhythm, or you know that the possessions in a game, you know, you're not able now to get into a shootout. So you better, when you have the ball, you better score on that possession, because if you miss a single possession, even though your defense in this past game was playing really well, it can be a problem for you. I think this is one of those we're going to have to track, you know, a month from now, where are they at? And then also, what's the month after look like when Rice and Worthy, hopefully, and Brown, hopefully, are on the field at the same time? Does that change their thought process? I had no issue. I think
we
talked about it.
More aggressive. I actually am fine with it.
We talked about this yesterday. The fourth and one in particular, right out of halftime, on their own 30-something yard line. Obviously, the execution was terrible. I have no problem with that. I was texting with a friend yesterday, and they're like, can you believe they went for this fourth and one right out of halftime? I was like, actually, I have no problem with that. I think there's a lot of fans that didn't like that. I'm fine with that. Right out of the gate, yes, it ended up being 3 free points, and I know the final score, you lost by 3, and you can play that game.
But Carlson missed a field goal. Sure. The 3 can come a lot of different places.
I think they needed that. The game was tied 10-10 at that moment. You got the opening kickoff. You go 3 and out and punt it right away. That's a momentum killer. Now, you could argue when you turn it over on downs, that can kill momentum too. There's arguments on both sides to that, but I have no problem with that decision. I hope it doesn't deter them from being aggressive. If against the Giants on Sunday Night Football, for example, on their opening drive, if they have a 4th and 1 at their own 38-yard line or 40 on the first possession, maybe they'll punt it. But if it's a game in which you know your offense is struggling again, I would want them to do that. Again, I have no problem with that thought process, but I'll be interested to see, was that Andy just not wanting to shed light on the fact that they're being more aggressive, or did he not understand the question? Because the question here was the whole sequence.
Yeah, we've always been one of the top teams in the league to go for it on fourth down. So I've done that for years. I tell you no.
But you had the number. They haven't.
It's
been
not accurate.
They haven't been one of the top teams to go for it on fourth down.
That's what we would call a lie or misleading. Again, they've been consistently in the 20s in the total number of attempts. Again, they are one of the more successful teams on fourth down, which might be why
the conversion rate is what he's saying.
We have sat on this show, I don't even know how many times, Gold, talking about how teams on the other side are far more aggressive as it relates to fourth down than the Chiefs, and how I would like them to mimic that. What's funny about this is I like this. I would like this to continue even when you get your weapons back, and partly because you're good at it. Like, forget the one that you missed for just a second. If you told me for every fourth down they went for, Gold, they got 5 out of 6, I'm good here. Go for as many fourth downs as you feel like at that point. Mostly because the Chiefs' aggressiveness is relative to the, I think, 1 or 2 yard game. They had a 4th and 7 in the fourth quarter with about 10 minutes to go, trailing by double digits. So, like, they could have, at that time in the Eagles game, made an argument for going for that 4th and 7 on their own side of the field. They decided not to. They punted. They were still in the game after the Tyquan Thornton one, so they were still alive, although it was hard, and they had to get a stop. If it's 4th and 1 and they want to go for it every time, I'm fine. I would prefer that they have a quarterback sneak to also roll into the mix, but that's a different thing. It's just, I don't know why he's trying to disguise it. I don't know why Andy doesn't want the league catching on. Like, they have the same statistics we do. They go over these numbers before. You are right now statistically far more likely to go for it.
Yeah, I don't know what his intent was with the answer. I will never have the answer to that. I just think it's interesting that through 2 weeks they are being more aggressive on fourth down. And I do think it's just because of the lack of issue, the lack of production, I should say, and the issue of offense consistently moving the football and not having the big plays again, and how every yard, as we said, is a struggle. The one thing on the 4th and 1, I know we're going to talk more play calling and specific stuff at 11 o'clock about this offense, including somebody I know you want to talk about as well. But like on that 4th and 1, it wasn't a QB sneak, duh. It also wasn't just, you know, simple as it gets, halfback dive, our line is going to beat your line. It was Kareem Hunt, to his left, and Kareem Hunt clearly at that point, and not only did he fumble it later on in that carry, he's only, like, if you're a defender, you know, if he's set up to the left of Mahomes, you know he's not going to hand it off to him and then run left and cut left.
Yeah.
So you're really narrowing.
You're telling the defense where you're telling
where you're going to go, and it makes it a little bit easier to predict if you're the defender there. Now, I guess they had someone to his right, didn't they, as well? They could hand it off to him. I can't remember who that was. But my point is, like, whoever you hand it off, you know which direction they're going in. So I don't even blame that one on Kareem Hunt. I don't know. That was your offensive line that you've invested so much in. Did not get any push.
No, they didn't. They got beat up pretty bad. And look, sometimes you're just going to lose snaps. Watch any other football game. Sometimes guys get 0 yards or lose two or only gain one. Sometimes you lose on the line of scrimmage. Obviously, it's more important that you don't lose in those moments. But what I'm saying is they're actually quite successful this year in those moments. So if they need to, in the meantime, be a more aggressive team, fine. And I told you I was worried about it due to the fact that kickers are making longer kicks than ever. And the fact that Harrison Butker has historically been one of the better kickers, although if he keeps missing as many as he's been missing last year and then this year, we'll be having a different conversation. If this year goes the same as last year, then the price he's paid is not worth what you might be able to find on the open market. And so, you know, like that's down the road. We don't have to have that conversation yet. But when you look at where they are, it's like, I was worried they were going to be less aggressive, but they know. I think they know what we know. In the meantime, while they're still short weapons, they got to get points. Right now in the first two games, not only does it look hard, they're also just not scoring. Last year, it looked hard, but at least goal, they were like getting in the 20s. Maybe they weren't a world beater offense of all time, but they were at least putting up some points. In these first two games, they're not even doing that. They're just like, they're just sitting in the teens.
They are. Now, how much of that, first two games out of the gate last year, and they were playoff teams, right, that they faced. Were they the same defenses? I don't know. I guess we'll find out as the season goes on how good ultimately the Eagles defense ends up being, how good the Chargers defense, who looked really good again last night. But last year they opened up against the Ravens. They scored 27 points. Last year, in second game, they scored 26 against the Bengals defense. It turned out to be the worst in football, and they scored 26. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, are we going to find out that like these are just also two really good defenses, and does some of it at least to a certain extent level out? Like the Giants have a really good front. Their issue is not their defense. The Giants' issue is their offense. I say that after
they had a shootout. Their defense was an issue last week.
Yeah, I say that after they got in the shootout. And Russell Wilson threw for over 400 yards, so their offense obviously wasn't the problem necessarily there. Some of this we'll have to figure out, but I like the aggressiveness. We'll see if that continues. Let's talk about the Chargers and Raiders. There's no secret. The Chargers are atop the AFC West 2 weeks in, 2-0, two division wins, a head-to-head win.
They have the Broncos next week.
Another division game coming up, so they could be 3-0 with three division wins. The way the schedule is set up, that's an unbelievable spot to be in if you're the Chargers. Yes, it would still only be three games into the year, but you couldn't ask for a better position to be in as an NFL team trying to win a division title, trying to knock off a team that has dominated a division for 9-plus years.
No, it's the Chargers look for real. I know we openly mocked them every given year, and the fact that they got a two-game lead on the Chiefs and the current tiebreaker, although, again, they'll play each other again, so you could get it back down to one game fairly easily just by getting a win against them later in the year. No, I definitely think the thing that has stood out probably the most is defensively. They did a lot to hold down Kansas City, and they made the Raiders just look bad yesterday. And so if they're going to play, and they were one of the top five defenses in points per game last year. Now, they lost Khalil Mack for... I don't assume
it was an ugly looking elbow injury. Is it a sling after the game? I don't know what.
Yeah, it seems unlikely he'd play next week against the Broncos. I guess I won't completely rule it out outside of there. But yeah, my biggest takeaway from that game last night is the Raiders still don't have enough playmakers, and Geno Smith is kind of average. They won't be a laughing stock, but they're not good enough again to actually compete for this thing. And Justin Herbert is an efficiency monster right now. What he's doing best is not putting on like a highlight reel every 5 seconds, but doing like being efficient, ruthlessly, I would argue, efficient over the first two games that have made him one of the most efficient and best quarterbacks in the NFL through 2 weeks.
The scariest thing for them to me watching, other than the record and the head-to-head win and everything, is that if it continues this way, that means that a guy that I like coming out of the draft, but it's been a bust until the last 2 weeks of his career, Quinn Johnston, TCU.
He looks good.
He's having the best start. He's having the best two-game stretch of his NFL career. He's got 8 catches, 150 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Had another long 40-plus yarder, I think it was, last night. If all of a sudden they have him and McConkey, and then they got the vet, Keenan Allen, mixed in, and I'm sure as the season goes on, maybe Omarion Hampton becomes a bigger factor, although that
fumble late last night
maybe hurts his confidence and what the confidence maybe they have in him. We'll see as the season goes on. But if Quentin Johnson ends up being the guy they thought they drafted 2 years ago as a big target down the field, that makes him even scarier. So that's a player I'm keeping an eye on for the Chargers the rest of the way. He ended up last night with 3 catches for 71 yards. Not a 40-yard touchdown. It was a 60-yard touchdown.
Here is the issue as we look already at the AFC West, because I think that's fair, because the Chargers, again, if they beat the Broncos this week, and that's no guarantee, they will be 3-0 in the division. Their schedule, not bad. They have the Broncos this week, a team that is, you know, good team. Not a gimme win by any means. Giants, that's a team that looks like it's mostly going nowhere. We'll see. They do face the Chiefs this weekend. The Commanders, the biggest question in that matchup will be, will Jaden Daniels be fine? It's a sprained knee. They're calling it week to week. Will he be fine 2 weeks from now? So that game varies in difficulty. Dolphins, will the Colts come crashing back to the earth? Vikings, and what's J.J. McCarthy by then? Titans? Steelers, but at home? Jags? I mean, it's like,
They only have one loss through like 8 or 9 games.
Have I listed a game in which they won't be favored? That's the question.
Like, right. No,
have I listed a single game in which they will not be favored?
They will likely be favored. The question is, 2 weeks in, are the teams that we think are toss-up games or not difficult games, do some of those teams start playing better? But right now,
or the Colts start playing worse?
Because it's almost too early to look at schedule strength, just because of right now we're only basing it off of teams that are 0-2, 2-0, or 1-1. I mean, it's such a small sample. But if you were wondering, where do they rank right this second? Now, there's other metrics to use for strength of schedule. You could go what you're saying, which is based off of are they favorites or not, which seems to be more accurate, or you just go based off a win percentage, and it would tell you the Chargers have the 4th easiest schedule remaining the whole year. Okay, it's two weeks in, but that's what it says.
That's because the Dolphins are 0-2, the Vikings.
It says the Chiefs have the 13th toughest, if you're wondering. The Cardinals have the toughest schedule. It's because the Rams are 2-0. That division is brutal right now in the NFC West, record-wise. So we'll see. The easiest schedule, if you were curious, it's what we thought heading end of the year. The Bills have the easiest schedule remaining in football. We knew that going in. It's 2 weeks in.
I'm borderline about to call it on the Bills being the number one seed.
I genuinely
think it might be a wrap. I think the Bills are the number one seed. Their next 3 games are against the Dolphins, Saints, Patriots. Okay, so that's 5-0. Then they go Falcons, Panthers, Chiefs. So at least the Chiefs one's difficult, hypothetically. Like, it's, you know, just as long as they're playing better football, it's like, their schedule is a joke. It's mostly because the AFC East is.
They had a great, we kind of said that before the season. I mean, this was always set up really well. And then the fact that they won that Sunday night opener against Baltimore, the one other team that you think is going to challenge them, maybe for the top seed. Now they have it. They have the tiebreaker. It's just, if the Bills finish with 13 wins, we think the Ravens are getting to 14. I don't. So that's the challenge you have if you're Baltimore now for the one seed. And we'll see how the rest of the AFC plays out. Like, I don't think anybody thinks the Colts are going to be challenging for the number one seed just because they're out to a 2-0 start.
What's your guess right now of what the Chargers win total is? I asked that as it relates to the AFC West, like, obviously.
What it's set at or what I think it'll
what
be?
What do you, I guess either, I'm curious by. What do you guys think they'll actually finish with?
That schedule,
13-4. Man, they were an 11-win team last year. So 2 win, I mean, that's not like a huge increase.
If they beat the Broncos, 13's absolutely in play. Before the season, I thought nobody else, frankly, but the Chiefs could get to 13 wins.
If they start 3-0, but if they're 3-0, including everybody in the division, I would say 13-4.
If you were wondering, just Vegas updated win totals for a couple of the teams in this division. The updated total for the Chargers, over under, even money.
11.5.
Let's see. Over under 11.5. The over is +140. So technically, the over under 10.5, it's still -135. If you think they're winning 11 games, even at -135, it's not a terrible, unless you think the Chargers are going to charge her all of a sudden. But
what's
it doesn't
the
look
Chiefs
like
down to?
The Chiefs total. Now, you can bet any number you want if you're willing to pay the juice, but the base number is down to 10.5. Over, actually, it's worse than that. Over 9.5 wins for the Chiefs is -130. To win 10 games, -130.
Well, I think we all know what bet I'll be making later today.
-130 that the Chiefs
that's
still
it?
Get to 10 wins. Yep.
If you think that's still all the juice I got to give up?
If you think they're still getting to 11 wins, over 10.5 is +145.
Great. Okay.
Other division
See
teams,
on the Denver, betting apps later.
Denver Broncos, who are 1-1 out of the gate. For them to go over 8.5 wins, it's -140. To go over 9.5 wins, it's +125.
I will say one of the biggest things, and the text line pointed out, still one of the biggest things working against the Chargers is that nothing is a home game.
True.
Like the rest of the year, like when they face the Steelers at home, and I can't remember if that's home or road, but like if it's the Steelers at home, that's not a home game. That's a medium game.
Unless the Chargers fans can come out of the woodwork, you know, and if they start winning games, I don't know. They're going to hire more of those fake fans that we saw last year.
She was on the YouTube broadcast.
She was with Mr. Beast.
Uh-huh.
She almost got shot out of a cannon, or did she?
And then I saw Mr. Beast get punched in the stomach by Mike Tyson.
He almost passed out.
Oh, it?
It was pregame, wasn't it, for the Canelo fight over the weekend?
Yeah.
In Crawford. And yeah, like it was a real, it was a nice, good punch apparently, and normally Mr. Beast is kind of fake and phony.
His soul left his body.
Like, it was normally fake and phony, but no, he legitimately like almost passed out from the punch.
It was the first time I've seen him, I think, as the tweet put out, it was like the first time I'd seen him make a real human emotion. He's like a real person there for 5 seconds when that punch landed in his gut and he had to like feel it through his soul. I mean, I'd make the same face.
We hit the ground. I'll be real. I would have fallen to the ground.
I'd be in tears.
Mike Tyson punching me in the gut, I would have hit the ground immediately.
Yeah, it'd be pretty rough, man. I'm not gonna lie. We'll ask some of our guests throughout the week, including Nate Taylor later today, what they think of the Chargers as well, because there is part of that. And in about 10 minutes, we'll talk about what to do with Xavier Worthy, as he could come back this week against the Giants, and maybe we can get a sense of
it. X-Lines convinced it was a stage punch.
I don't know, man.
I don't think that one was. Normally, I agree with you. I think the stuff is staged quite a bit. I don't know on that one.
The look on, I don't think he's that good of an actor. The look on his face was one of like, oh no, I've made a huge mistake.
It was like Mike Tyson was like rubbing his shoulder after, like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy.
And he was laughing at him.
Yeah. I don't know.
Drew, did you see that? Do you think it was a stage punch?
I saw it on Twitter after the fight or whatever it was. No, I don't think it was staged. I think he actually hit him.
I didn't watch that fight at all. Who won?
Crawford.
Crawford did.
Was he favored to win?
I don't remember. I did not watch.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not watch.
You knew who won, though. So you got me.
Yeah,
beat.
I saw the headline, but I didn't dig into it.
I missed the headline,
deeper.
So I
didn't
know.
Dig into it deeper. Like, how was it, a close fight or anything like that?
It seemed like it was by decision, but it was pretty convincing. But won
someone
a lot of the
says,
rounds.
Gold, what if you could get punched by Mike Tyson if it would bring your sense of smell back? If you could promise
honestly,
me that I'm not going to like
actually do,
crack a rib.
If
you can promise me I'm not going to crack a rib, then yes. If it meant I had to pass out from a punch from Mike Tyson in the gut, and somehow that triggered smell again, I would take it. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't been able to smell for, you guys know this. You listen to the show for a while. It'll be 2 years in December that I haven't. I cannot legitimately. It can be the most foul smelling thing. I cannot smell.
I think we should try to
taste.
I think we should start with smelling salts just for starters.
I think that would be.
I don't think that would impact me.
I think base level. Let's get a smelling salt.
Go for it. I don't think a smelling salt would do anything. I think I would be holding it right here and nothing would happen. And you guys, I'd hold it to your nose and you immediately back away. I don't think that would work. I literally can't smell anything.
Anybody have any high school coach in the area?
I'm sure somebody has.
Got some smelling salts they're willing to part with?
Can't smell anything.
We just need three, just for the three of us. Or sometimes we do it in fan clubs, so maybe a fourth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Let's just find out if that could jumpstart it. Get you some aroma.
Find time to get us them today. We can have Nate do some smelling salts as well, you know, when he comes in.
Nate's got enough energy. Imagine him or me.
Oh, my goodness.
I already get accused of, like, being a runaway freight train of energy. You start putting me on smelling salts, this show might be out of control.
Anywhere in a quiet space with Cody, there's times Cody it'll be like, mm-hmm. hey man,
I don't have great volume control, and I've been working out with my kids because my kids don't have great volume control either.
Well, at least they're kids, it's understandable.
Yeah, but I fear that it's just like it's gonna stick.
Someone says the smelling salts might re-trigger your smelling. I mean, I'm open to anything. Give me my smell back, please. I tried the whole smoothie thing that the one listener suggested. I appreciate the suggestion. That did not work. Although I maybe didn't give it long enough, but that did not work. It's two years. I'm convinced now, honestly, some doctor could tell me. Now 2 years without smell, I feel like I'm screwed. Like, it's not, like, I don't think there's any way she's coming back after 2 years. Like, now I feel like, unfortunately, whatever, if it's damaged and nerves or whatever you want to call that, I feel like it's done for good.
Mine was damaged for a long time, and I was okay after an ammonia lab blew up in my face. So, you know, you could be okay.
What were you doing at an ammonia lab?
Well, it was just high school chemistry.
Oh, you created, okay.
Well, we were supposed to create an ammonia fountain, and mine was an ammonia explosion, I would say. It less fountained, more exploded in my face. I had chemical burns and everything. It's
really?
Oh, dude, you could see the goggle marks around my eyes.
You have any photos of that?
I don't know. I have to look.
I need a photo of this.
You can see the goggle. Well, the worst part is I did the experiment and it didn't fountain the way I wanted. And I said, I'd like to clean and reset the project so I can do it again because I really liked chemistry. And he said, yeah, sure. And then it exploded in my face.
I did not know this. We learned something new, even 5+ years
into
the show.
So I will not be as part of Professor Tapp segment tomorrow teaching you about ammonia fountains because I don't feel like I'm qualified.
Good
to speak
idea.
On that.
Up next, someone that hopefully is back on the field Sunday evening, but should he be? And Drew gets us the latest on college football heading into, I lose count, week 3 or 4 or something like
that. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That next. Just getting started on a Tuesday. Thanks for hanging out with us. Video stream is up and running. We'll get to some college football with Drew here in about 8 minutes or so. But all eyes will once again be on the status of Xavier Worthy as the week continues. Andy Reid will speak again tomorrow. As we said, Nate Taylor will join us at 1 o'clock to maybe get some more insight here. It sounds like he was at least somewhat close to being available this past week, much quicker than any of us thought. And it seems like there's a real, real chance that he's available on Sunday. I guess the question is, do you think he should play Sunday? And you're like, well, why wouldn't he? I guess what we don't have the information on is the injury risk, re-injury risk?
I mean, increase, there is some.
There's always going to be the risk. I'm saying, is it increased by coming back this week versus waiting another week? If the answer is no, it's the same thing. It's just pain tolerance or whatever. Well, then I think he'll play on Sunday. If it's a, hey, we think if we wait another week, his re-injury risk goes down. Well, then obviously I would say wait till the Ravens game. But I don't think they were in a position offensively. And we're going to talk more big picture with them in 25 minutes. Based on what we have seen, and the lack of guys getting open consistently, the explosive plays aren't there other than a couple shots to Tyquan Thornton where they hit on one, thank goodness, this past week. I guess it didn't really matter, but you get my point. At least it was nice to see. This offense isn't good enough to say, oh, it's the Giants. We can wait another week till we get our most explosive playmaker back on the field. No! So as long as the re-injury risk isn't way higher, then to me, And he can have the same catch radius, he should play Sunday.
This is really difficult because if they were 1-1, I would say, don't do that. Don't risk this, right? Like, don't risk this. You are a team who it matters for in December, in January, in February, who is available to you. It sure as hell doesn't matter who's available to you on September 16th. Don't risk this injury over the Giants. The fact that they are 0-2 is a bit of a wrinkle in here because they straight up cannot afford to go 0-3. That will knock them out of almost everything, in my opinion. It will for sure, and I already think the one seed's dead anyway, it will for sure knock the one seed out of the picture. That'll be long gone. If the Chargers win in addition to you losing to the Giants, well, then you can kiss the division goodbye too. You're not making up on almost any team in the NFL 3 games in the division, even if it is only 3 games into the season. That's a nearly impossible task. And you'd still have 3 more weeks without your offense. And then you'd still have to beat Baltimore and still have to beat Detroit just to get and Jacksonville just to get to 3-3 before you even kick things off. So in that moment, I will say I'd risk it. But my biggest fear, honestly, with the way that they are set up right now is, and we'll take your thoughts, 913-586-7965 or in the text line. But like, I am curious whether or not.
If he's truly available, like as in all the re-injury stuff, the catch stuff,
then
he feels confident in it as well, because he has to also be confident in it, the shoulder that is. Then you cannot have the luxury of just like, well, we'll get him next week. No, you're not. The opponent also defensively is pretty darn good, and you're just not, as you said, it's the difference between being 1-1, 2-0, or 0-2. Like
if you cannot, get up big in the second half and you want him to take some snaps off, be my guest. Yeah,
and maybe he is limited on Sunday. That's fine. Yeah. I understand that. If you tell me he's on a snap count or something, or maybe this is not the week where they want to do the jet sweep or whatever. Yeah. If they think there's something that means it's more likely for him to get hurt. But also, you're playing the NFL. Every play is going to have a potential hurt for that shoulder to get popped back out or whatever. And I'm sure opponents, of course, are well aware of the injury. If you're pressing them in coverage, they're going to make sure they're going after that shoulder. You might have some big defensive lineman that comes and makes a tackle, or a linebacker, I should say, and that guy might purposely lean on that shoulder. That's just the name of the game. It happens every week.
I genuinely think this is one of those, like, it's worth the risk situations, and that you're just going to have to take it. Now, I'll admit, because we got asked by the morning show as we were transitioning over here, what percentage chance do you think that all three of these guys are on the field at any point this season? Rashee Rice, Hollywood Brown, and, of course, Xavier Worthy. And I was like, I don't know, 20%? I'd love to say it's higher than that. Rashee Rice is currently healthy and will play in a month. Hollywood Brown is currently healthy and you know, has to make it a month healthy. And then Xavier Worthy is likely to be on the field, if not this week, next week against Baltimore. We think Xavier Worthy will be back on the field. But that's always the fear. It only takes that one hit on Xavier Worthy's shoulder. And then, no, they're never on the field together at any point this year. And Hollywood always feels like, and I hope it doesn't feel like that at some point this year, always kind of feels like a ticking time bomb. He went limping off the field, and I was already imagining the Chiefs signing Mecole Hardman on Wednesday this week. Now, it ended up he was fine. He came back on the field, and he was
okay. Find out when they get back to practice, make sure he's not limited at a practice this week or something. But
they just made him play through the injury, knowing where they are at wide receiver.
Dusty and Bob, they asked that question. My answer was 30, 35% chance that by week 7, they're all three on the field at the same time.
I hope it's the case, because I do want to see, and this will relate to a conversation we have coming up at 11 o'clock. I am willing to wait to see part of that before I make my ultimate judgments on where the Chiefs offense is. But you know what you need more than anything right now? A damn win. And Worthy, considering the fact that I have to keep watching passes go to Jason Brownlee or a million other wide receivers that had no business being regular portions of this offense early on in the season, have to be, and not their own fault, but because they were thrust into it due to the fact that they're missing wide receivers 1, 2, and at least parts 4 during the season, where they just don't have the horses. And if you're going to be that short on it, I'll take the chance with Worthy. If they were 1-1, I would be telling you, don't play him this week. I would say, just wait one more. Just wait. What's the harm? Just wait one more week.
But that's the question.
You can get past the Giants, surely. That's how I'd feel if they were 1-1, but they're 0-2.
But that's the thing.
So
I'm
taking the chance.
You said it there, though. What's the harm? That's what I'm saying. If there is no view of increased harm by having him out there, re-injury risk and all that, well, then he needs to play. It's still like he's still a guy in his second year in the league that is, like, you know, needs to be part of this offense. So as long as you know you're not doing anything to jeopardize him long term or anything like that, that he's effective and he's not just going to be a decoy or something, then he should be playing on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, the decoy part, that's always the interesting stuff. The teams, they're going to buy that and then let Thornton run wild? And does a decoy work if the guys you were throwing to, or the guys I just mentioned, like Jason Brownlee or Noah Gray, like, is he enough of a decoy for them to also get open? Because that's the other part. The guy's lower in the depth chart if you are a decoy. And I'll just be honest, if you're a decoy, don't waste your time.
I agree.
Don't even waste your time. If he's there, you better be throwing to him. Like, just plain and simple, he needs the ball. Because he is still their best wide receiver on the roster tomorrow, like on Sunday if they play. He is better than Hollywood Brown. Or at least I'd like to see him more than Hollywood Brown. I understand Hollywood Brown's best season is still better than that of Xavier Worthy's best season. But we obviously were very optimistic, as most people were, about what Xavier Worthy's season was going to look like this year.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll talk more about the offense as a whole, including a name that I think anytime this offense struggles, always lights up the text line, always lights up social media. But first, Drew's got some college football week 3, 4, 5, 6.
It technically is going into week 4.
Okay.
We're going into week 4. And I've got some thoughts. So yesterday we mentioned a little bit briefly, the AP poll is starting to bother me. And it's not because...
This
is the thing. It's not useless like you're saying, Gold. It's just that the people who are voting on it
Don't watch?
Don't make any sense in terms of the poll. And no, this is not the individual who said that she still ranked Florida over USF even after USF beat them.
Yeah.
This is another reason. She is just a victim, I think, of the cause of the AP poll and what it is. Texas has not looked good this year. They're 2-1. They're still eighth. They moved. They haven't moved at all. They beat UTEP. Didn't look good. They're not a top 10 team. I don't know why they're ranked in the top 10. Notre Dame doesn't have a win this year. Granted, combined 4 points to teams that are currently in the top 10. I don't mind them being in the top 25, but they're 24th. And then you look at USF, who has beaten two ranked teams. They did get beat badly by Miami. More on them in a second. But they're not ranked anymore, and they were ranked 18th. There's too much jumping and falling and all this other stuff. It's crazy. Georgia Tech beat Clemson. They're all of a sudden 18th, and Clemson is getting 6 votes to be in the AP top 25, and there's that big of a jump for Georgia Tech. It gets confusing how on a week-to-week basis things shift just like that at a snap of a finger.
Drew a lifelong...
It's crazy.
I, casual college football fan, Drew, lifelong... absolute adore of college football. Just figured out it's rich for the big schools. Bad news, everybody. Notre Dame, for whatever reason, just gets more benefit of the doubt than any other school.
If we're ranking,
even though I agree with you, they don't deserve to be in the top 25. They're 0-2.
If we're ranking top 25 teams, Notre Dame is better than teams that are in the top 25 currently.
But this goes back to the argument with
wins
Alabama. Wins have to matter at some point, right?
Which is why I have a little bit of an issue with, like, I have a little bit of an issue with how things certainly play out. But
these AP voters. Did we ever find out if Bink got confirmed to vote this year?
I don't think he actually is voting. I'll be totally honest with you.
Whoever that person is that screwed up and admittedly, you know, didn't care what actually happened on the field, that person should not be a voter anymore. But this goes back to
it shouldn't be national voters.
Is worthless. I don't care what the preseason poll is. I don't clearly care what the weekly poll doesn't mean anything because we all agree that it's not correct at all. Like it's not even just like, oh, you disagree that one team should be 10 versus 12. If we're having it where clearly teams shouldn't even be in the top 25, like the 95% of the voters agree with that, and you've got other people still doing it with someone like out on a date having dinner instead of doing their job. If you commit to being an AP voter, then you have to agree
to watch more,
games. Like nobody's saying like the average person shouldn't go about their life to miss football games. Of course, like go enjoy your life. But if you sign up to be a voter, then you should be watching West Coast teams or whatever, right?
You should watch at least as much as Jay Binkley, in my opinion. That is like the basement level.
Which means sit down and just dive in.
Yes, basement level amount of games. College football is the only sport, in my opinion, who argues that wins don't matter. Oh, whoa. Forget about who we beat or who we lost to. None of that matters. It's just about vibes of how good our team is.
That's the vibe with the AP poll currently.
The Notre Dame thing is just crazy. We're in, you said, week four?
Yes.
Week four, if you don't have a win, and I understand Notre Dame did not play every single week. They played week one, and then they didn't play till this past weekend. But if it's week four, it is the middle of September, and you don't have a win,
you cannot
be ranked.
Yeah, I think that them being ranked is – I get why they are ranked. I get why they shouldn't be as well. I want to get – I'll get into more into Notre Dame in just a second. Miami, I think they're very legit. I would rank them number one in the country probably right now. Just because I know that they're ranked four, and Ohio State has looked fine, but just the same as Texas, they've been fine. They've looked okay. They've been all right.
Arch Manning,
but,
though.
I think that Miami is more legit, at least at this point. Maybe LSU you want to put at one, but I think Miami should be the number one team in the country right now. I think they have the best offensive line and defensive line in the country. Carson Beck looks good. We'll see if they screw it up the way that Mario Cristobal teams have done so the last few years, but it feels like they're the best team in the country right now.
I gotta say, I think the small schools, what Miami is doing well is what these other teams have done well, where I think the small schools have done it backwards. K-State and the other likes of the country, you know, K-State, KU, whoever, you gotta stop being the minor leagues of the eventual quarterback for the national champion or a college football team. And even like Carson Beck obviously was at a big school.
Yeah,
but Georgia. It's like, it seems like all these teams, every year, it seems like the current prevailing trend is you'd rather have a year four guy at quarterback who's been at three schools than anybody at the younger levels. Like Michigan right now would almost rather have a just veteran college football quarterback than the guy they've got.
It's going to work out for Michigan, though, I think, because
he doesn't look very good so far.
That's because he's a true freshman.
Yeah. But that's my point.
He also has no – Michigan has no wide receivers, in fairness to them. They offensively, they don't have a good enough roster.
But like by the time it's done, will he be Georgia's quarterback? I guess is my point.
No.
Why would you? Are you sure?
Yes.
Carson Beck was the quarterback at Georgia and is now at a different top program. If they why get, can't it, Georgia, if Georgia can lose their quarterback for a team that's ranked fourth in the country, why can't Michigan?
Oh, you mean him transfer? Oh, I mean, yeah. Of course he could leave.
That's what
I thought. You meant to see the type of player that Carson Beck is. Oh,
no,
okay.
I'm saying okay. Could you know, like, let's say, like, what is it? Two freshmen, just kind of give him time. By the time they give him time, he might be the starting quarterback for USC, winning them a national championship instead of you.
And in fairness, K-State might have to deal with that with Avery Johnson after this season. That might be a serious question we have to look at. Real quick, one final thing. The people who were saying Notre Dame, Alex Gold, you're a part of this group, but there were so many people who were saying Notre Dame season is over with. It's not. If they went out and they go 10-2, the fact that they're not in a conference actually could be the reason.
They don't
reason
play a single ranked team the rest of the year.
That's right now. That's right now. That's right now. Also, the fact that they don't play in a conference actually could be the reason that they do get in. Because if they finish the year 10-2, if they win the games like you guys have just talked about, them not being in a conference title game actually could be the reason they get in. Because if you're looking at the ACC, or dare I say the Big Ten, or the Big 12 as well, if you've got teams that are 10-2,
but you agree they have to run the
lose,
table, right?
Oh, of course.
Okay, all right, just making sure. We're not trying to say a 9-3 team can
do it. No, they got
to
win every game.
But Notre Dame's playoff chances are not squashed because they lost to two top 10 teams by a combined 4 points. I think people got to relax because we've seen teams fall out of the playoff by losing their conference title game. I think that absolutely could happen this year in the ACC or the Big 12 in particular, where, hey, if you get two Big 12 teams that are 10-2 and they lose and they're 9-3 or they're 10-3 all of a sudden and Notre Dame is 10-2 and they do say beat USC, who's a ranked team, that Big 12 team has fallen out. I'm sorry.
Probably. The schedule, by the way, for Notre Dame, so they get you're right, none of them are ranked. Right, I guess theoretically somebody can switch. I just would ask what team. USC would be the answer. They're 25th right now.
USC.
I would ask what team do you else could think could be ranked? Notre Dame plays Purdue, then Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, USC, Boston College, Navy, Pitt, Syracuse, Stanford. They better hope USC's still ranked when they play them.
I think NC State could be ranked. I think Arkansas potentially could also be ranked in the top 25 by the time they play. But everybody else, Navy, maybe.
Navy's getting ranked?
I mean, Navy was ranked in the top 20 last year for most of the season.
I mean, Arkansas plays Memphis before the Notre Dame game. Is that what's going to really bump them into the top 25?
Memphis is very, very good.
But they're not ranked either. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think
just
people
went
are,
out. I think it's pretty
people are
for
eliminating
that.
Them way too quickly. Way, way too quickly.
That's a little college football. Every Tuesday, Drew gives us some of the headlines and his thoughts on how the season is going. Of course, on Friday, we'll look a little more on the local end. We know the Kansas State Wildcats are off this weekend. Kansas welcomes in West Virginia. Missouri takes on South Carolina. We still don't know for sure the injury status of Sellers. That obviously changes the entire game, whether or not he plays in Columbia, Missouri.
No, it's a big miss. Go ahead.
Sorry, Cody. Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan, presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces the most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
I know when they changed the rule this offseason, we talked about it, but I'm watching the game last night and they're going through a whole TV news thing, and Tom Brady is sitting up there in the coach's booth. And to find out that he meets with Chip Kelly three times a week to go over offensive game plan, defensive game plan, structure for the offense, et cetera, et cetera. So it's fair to say he is a very, very, very involved owner. This offseason, and a bunch of fans missed it based on my social media interactions last night, they changed the rule so that Tom Brady gets to do one of the things they initially said he couldn't do, which is attend these production meetings in which they're allowed to ask team strategy and these other stuff. It is insane that this is allowed, and it's only made worse by now you knowing what Tom Brady's involvement is with the actual play on the field from the Raiders. Look, I know they need as much help as they can get as a franchise, and they've been a joke for 20 years. It's crazy for one reason, and this is the strongest argument I'll make for it, and then I'll let you guys respond, because I can't understand how the NFL, from an optics perspective, for one, would allow it to happen, but it is a competitive advantage only being given to Tom Brady and the Raiders, and to no one else. And for every person in my mentions yesterday who continuously tried to tell me, it doesn't matter, nothing in those meetings matters, they don't say anything, you think they're going to tell Tom Brady stuff, fine. If that is your stance, I would like Matt Nagy and Brett Veach to attend them too. And just as long as you're fine with that, we can get along. But if Matt Nagy's not also allowed to sit in the production meeting on Zoom and hear everything the opponents he's getting ready to face have to say about anything they're doing on the field, then I don't want to hear it. Yeah. Then I don't want to hear it. If you're not willing to let Matt Nagy go and they don't matter, then it shouldn't matter. Then Tom Brady shouldn't be
allowed. The only problem I would say with that example is Tom Brady is not having the production meeting the same week the Raiders are playing that exact team. You're bringing up a scenario where it'd be like if Matt Nagy was in the production meeting.
He can just go to the same one for Tom Brady. I don't
care.
Fine.
Okay. Because
it doesn't have to be the scenario, direct opponent.
Okay. Because like, it's not like Tom Brady.
Although he does do the Bears game this week and he has the Bears the following week for the Raiders.
Right. So. But it's not game week. Anyway, Point being, so I agree on the optics. It's not a great look at all for the league. I still think in general, like, this doomsday stuff is overblown. We talked about this a year ago as well. I agree that it doesn't look good. I don't know why the NFL would even allow it to morph. So like to that fact, this conversation even exists. Like why would they even want to open Pandora's box to the conversation? I agree with you there. I think some of it is overblown as far as what is really happening. I actually think the biggest thing is not what you're saying of the game plan stuff. It's actually more down the road of, hey, Tom Brady's in a production meeting against whoever, or, you know, Fox is calling a game, you said Chicago or whatever.
Yeah.
He talks to a player or he talks to an assistant coach. Fast forward 4 years from now, that coach is now a candidate for a head coaching job. He already has a relationship. I'll buy into that being, that to me is way more of a problem than like on a given week, you think Andy Reid is actually telling Tom Brady anything that's going to hurt his team? Absolutely not. So I think that part's overblown. I'll buy the personnel stuff down the road being a bigger deal. That's it. The NFL, if enough people continue to other owners complain enough, ultimately the owners are who will have to shut this thing down. Right now, enough of them haven't you know, pushed against it enough to where they've banned it. But I think some of this is being overblown, acting like they're giving them the nuclear codes in these meetings.
No, but it is a complete, it, even if it's a small gold, if it's a 0.05% competitive advantage, they're giving it to them and not everyone else. They like on purpose, they're doing it. And they've already, and this is the problem I have, is they had to change one of the rules because they realized Tom Brady sucked in the booth. And they were like, well, he's got to sit in these meetings. Otherwise, he won't know what he's talking about. We actually need him to get used to some of this stuff. So let's bend the rules and let Tommy, you know, be a part of a little bit of this so that we can make him slightly better at the job. Fox has paid him a ton of money to do. And so, like, how long until he can attend practice? How long? Are you sure that it's going to stop there? Because before they said he couldn't do the one thing, and now he can. My
he will not be allowed to attend practice.
My whole argument for the players, for the people who say, and I think you're right, for the people, like my only argument is for the people who say nothing in there matters, then all I'm asking is that one team gets to, every team gets to put one person in the same meeting. Then we'll call it even. Tom gets to sit in the production meeting and see what it is. So does Nagy. I get to choose one member of my front office to sit in. I don't care if it's Nagy or Spags or Veach.
Yeah, I
get to put one person in there.
That's fine. And
the, like, because if you think it's nothing in there, then you shouldn't care that. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if just generally you think it's nothing in there, it shouldn't matter if Spags is sitting in there either.
Yeah,
he can take 30 minutes out of his day. It's fine.
If we, in the from the text line, I think this is kind of what I'm alluding to, which is if it was something coaches were concerned about, how can we haven't, even through the grapevine, heard Andy Reid or Sean Payton or whoever, any of these coaches have been around for a very long time that are in his division, by the way. How come we haven't heard any of them?
I just wonder if it's because they respect the guy who's going to go down most likely is the greatest quarterback of all time, so they don't want to speak up against it. I don't know. That's fair.
I agree with you that they respect him, no doubt. But if they actually thought it was jeopardizing their coaching future, as in not winning football games or whatever, I think we would see more complaints. The part I agree with, again, is the optics part of it. Why would the NFL even want this? Like,
open the door.
That's the, because now it allows you and a lot of people to to say, hey, what's going on here? So I agree with that part of it, but we'll see another year of this if it gets altered again. Maybe last night, the fact that there was the visual of him in the coach's box with Chip Kelly, the OC, maybe that's what was kind of like the tush push. Maybe this is the moment that causes it. I don't sweat it as much. That's all.
This goes back to the same thing. You get to do one of these two jobs, not both. Like, I'm sorry that you've had every advantage and you're taking money from His Excellency in Saudi Arabia, too. You don't get to have all of it. You don't get to both be an owner and be a coach and be a broadcaster. You can't, like, it's crossing too many lines. It blurs too many lines, in my opinion, for, like, what is and isn't allowed for most people.
But you and I both know, fair or not, he's not most people.
Most people in the NFL, not like me or you.
But even in the NFL world, like, it's Tom freaking Brady. Like, it's different. I don't know. You're right. I mean, if 5 years ago, it's weird because he's still playing. Let's say I was going to say Joe Flacco. He's still playing. Pick another Trent Dilfer. Okay, if Trent Dilfer was part owner of the Ravens somehow, okay, And he was doing ESPN. He used to work for ESPN. I don't know what he's doing. Sure. Is he still at UAB, Drew?
Yep, he's coaching UAB.
He's down there. So I think you're probably right. If it was not Tom Brady, I think there's no chance. No chance this is allowed. He is definitely getting preferential treatment. I'm not disagreeing with that.
I guess, so what's the problem? Like, why don't I just give Tony Romo 0.0000001% ownership of the Chiefs and be like, hey, if you don't mind, report back what you hear. Thanks.
Because that would be called collusion.
That's what Brady's doing.
No, you think that's what... No. See, there's two different things. You think that's what's happening. What you just described would be a sure thing that's happening in that exact scenario. We'll see, man. It would be something to follow throughout the rest of the year and maybe years to come. All right, up next, let's get back into the offense. Bigger picture, some name that I know you want to talk about. We see it on the text line a lot, so let's do it. It centers around the offense. Next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.